Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Anna Mateo reports on city trees. Katie Weaver has a story on the first Ugandan nominated for a Grammy Award. And Faith Perlow answers a question from a listener. Later, we hear part two of The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe. But first, here is Anna Mateo.
Life in a city can be especially hard for a tree. Buildings, pollution, poor soil, insects, and even car crashes can add to tree loss. Now, the warming climate is making a tree's life even harder. Between 2016 and 2021, a report from the city of Seattle in Washington state said the city lost about 255 hectares of tree covering. The report blamed climate change in part for the loss. Then came the driest summer on Seattle's record books in 2022. The drier conditions and hotter temperatures have left many trees with brown leaves, naked branches, and extreme seeding. These are all signs of tree stress. A tree expert at Washington Park Arboretum, Shay Cope, said that you can see evidence of tree stress in maple and hemlock trees. They are just loaded with cones or seeds. It's kind of their last-ditch effort to reproduce. Nicholas Johnson is a tree expert for Seattle City Parks. He said if this warming climate continues, we are going to have a lot of trees die. Under the heat, he said, trees get weak, just like people. Researchers from France and Australia studied the effect of hotter temperatures and less rain on more than 3,100 trees and plants in 164 cities across 78 countries. They found about half the trees in the cities were experiencing climate conditions beyond their limits. They also found that by 2050, nearly all trees planted in Australian cities will not survive. David Nowak is a retired scientist for the U.S. Forest Service. He said, "It's not the gradual change that's going to be the problem. It's these extreme swings of too much water, too little water, too much wind, and storm intensities that are going to cause these rapid changes." In 2005, Hurricane Katrina destroyed about 10% of the trees in New Orleans, Louisiana, said Michael Karam, director of Parks and Parkways. And in 2021, he added, Hurricane Ida uprooted many new tree plantings. With climate change, researchers are also concerned that many cities will lose newly planted trees before they reach maturity, between 10 to 20 years. Non-native trees have been brought to cities for some time. However, climate change is causing many tree experts to specifically consider them, a practice called assisted migration. In the city of Bellevue, Washington, Experts are growing different kinds of trees, specifically for climate change. On city grounds, they are planting baby giant sequoias, just a few centimeters tall. The giant sequoias are not native to the Pacific Northwest area. But tree managers in the city, east of Seattle, are planting more sequoias because the trees can deal with the lack of rain and insects. Once these trees are established, they grow incredibly fast, said Rick Bailey of the city's forest management program. Planting more non-native trees is also drawing attention to something city tree experts have learned from years of tree deaths. Having many different kinds and ages of trees is important to keeping urban forests alive. Life always finds a way, said Nicholas Johnson, the tree expert for Seattle City Parks. And in Seattle, people are helping life find a way. I'm Anna Mateo.
Eddie Kenzo does not know exactly when he was born. He lost his mother at the age of 4. He did not know his father. He spent most of his childhood living on the streets, not knowing how to read or write. He often worried about when or if his next meal would come. From that humble beginning, Kenzo has become the first Uganda-based singer to earn Grammy consideration. His recording, Gimme Love, was nominated this month for a Grammy Award for Best International Music Performance. Kenzo shares the nomination with co-performer American Matt B. Some Ugandans dismiss Kenzo's music, saying he is not much of a singer. Others see his musical experimentation as a sign of a gifted artist. But for Kenzo, any recognition of his work is a reminder of how far he has come. Honestly speaking, I am so overwhelmed. I am so nervous at the same time, Kenzo told the Associated Press. I thank God that we made it. In 2015, Kenzo, whose real name is Edrisa Musuza, won a BET Award as the Viewer's Choice for Best New International Artist. He was the first and only Ugandan so honored to date. The award followed the release of his song, Sitya Loss, which became very popular. The linked music video features children dancing in a poor rural town in central Uganda. The energetic performance captured international attention. Growing up, Kenzo had wanted to become a soccer player. His skill won him financial support to attend a school. But he later dropped out and returned to the hustling that he says made him a man. I am a hustler, he told AP. This is a very huge step for me, my family, and the ghetto people. The hustlers, the people who come from nothing. It gives us a lot of hope that anything is possible. Kenzo recorded his first single in 2008. He became famous in 2010 with the song Stamina, which was praised for its youthful energy. And he has since been invited to perform across the world. 3 days before he found out that he had been nominated for a Grammy, Kenzo held a festival in Kampala that was attended by thousands, including Uganda's prime minister. It was a proud moment for a singer whose music is often ignored by local radio stations. Andrew Kagwa is an arts reporter with the local Daily Monitor newspaper. He described Kenzo as a mysterious person who has disrupted the industry in ways no one can explain. Kagwa said Kenzo is the Ugandan singer who refused to fail. Those who control music on Uganda radio stations may dislike the singer's work, the reporter said. But, he added, Kenzo has a loyal following. For some reason, things happen for Kenzo, Kagwa said. He just lets the awards, the accolades, speak for him. The Recording Academy will announce all the award winners at the 2023 Grammy Awards ceremony on February 5th. I'm Katie Weaver.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about three verbs: restrain, refrain, and restrict. Dear teacher, I am Honora, your loyal reader from China. I'm glad to write this email. I am confused by the words restrain, refrain, and restrict. I sincerely hope to know their differences. Looking forward to your wonderful answers. Yours, Honora. Dear Honora, thanks for writing to us. This is an interesting question. These words appear similar, but they are different in their meanings, use, and especially whether they take a direct object or not. Let's look at each word and compare. Restrain is a verb that takes a direct object. In grammar, this means that it is transitive. The first meaning is that you limit or prevent a person or even an animal from doing something. I must restrain my cat with a leash when going outside. Another meaning is that you prevent someone from doing something or deny them freedom by using physical force or official power. For example, you should never restrain someone having a seizure by holding them down. You can restrain yourself or others from some kind of action through methods of control, like restraining your emotions or limiting yourself in some way. I restrain myself from having another piece of pie on Thanksgiving. You can also restrain things from getting too large. The government raised interest rates in hopes of restraining inflation. Refrain is a verb that does not take a direct object. It is intransitive. To refrain means that you stop yourself from doing something by choice. I'm refraining from buying anything on Black Friday. There are better sales right before the holidays. Refrain is also a noun. In music, it means a repeated part of a song, such as a melody or chorus. We often remember refrains of songs because they are repeated. It can also mean a word, phrase, or a saying that is repeated, such as in a poem or song. Lana Del Rey uses the refrain, "red dress," in many of her songs. Let's move on to restrict. Restrict is a verb that takes a direct object. It means to put a limit on something, or to reduce or prevent it. In the U.S., the government restricts anyone under 18 years of age from voting in elections. If you restrict a person or animal to something else, you have limited them to one thing. They restrict their dog to a special diet for his health. You can restrict something to a particular group or place. During the height of the pandemic, many countries restricted entry to hospitals to authorized people or patients. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
We now welcome Faith to the program to talk a little bit more about this week's Ask a Teacher. Hi, Faith.
Hi, Dan. It's nice to be back with you. This week, we reviewed the differences between restrict, refrain, and restrain. As verbs, all three have a similar idea of limiting or containing in some way. Restrain can be more physical. Restrict is more limited to one thing. And refrain is the only one that doesn't take a direct object as a verb. It can also be used as a noun.
Could you give us another example of refrain as a noun?
Yep. Refrains are repeated parts in poetry and songs. In songs, they are typically the repeated choruses. For example, in Taylor Swift's new song, Antihero, she says, "It's me, hi, I'm the problem, it's me." And that starts the refrain.
Oh yeah, that part of the song is so catchy. I keep hearing it all over the radio.
That's because it's the refrain. It gets stuck in our head because it's repeated so often. Thanks for having me, Dan.
The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe. Part 2.
It was in Paris in the summer of 1840 that I met Auguste Dupin. Dupin was a strangely interesting young man with a busy, forceful mind. He seemed to look right through a person and uncover their deepest thoughts. Sometimes Dupin seemed to be not one, but two people. One who coldly put things together, and another who just as coldly took them apart. One morning, in the heat of the summer, Dupin showed me once again his special mental power. We read in the newspaper about a terrible killing. An old woman and her daughter, living alone in an old house in the Rue Morgue, had been killed in the middle of the night. The story in the paper went,
Paris, July 7th, 1840. Early this morning, cries of terror were heard in the western part of the city. They reportedly came from a house on the Rue Morgue, in which the only occupants were a Mrs. L'Espanier and her daughter Camille. Several neighbors and a policeman ran to the house. By the time they reached it, the cries had stopped. They forced the door open. As they entered, they heard two voices, apparently from above. The group searched but found nothing until the fourth floor. There they came to a door locked from the inside. Quickly, they forced it open. Before them was a bloody horror scene. The room was in total disorder, broken chairs and tables, and the mattress pulled from the bed. Blood was everywhere, on the walls, the floor, the bed. A sharp knife lay on the floor in a pool of blood. In front of the fireplace was a clump of long gray hair, also bloodied. It seemed to have been pulled straight out of a head. On the floor were four pieces of gold, an earring, several silver objects, and two bags containing a large amount of money in gold. Clothes had been thrown around the room. A lockbox was found left open with just a few old letters and papers inside. There was no one there, but when the group inspected the fireplace, they discovered another horror. A still warm body had been forced up the chimney. It was the old woman's daughter. There was blood on the face and dark, deep finger marks on the neck, suggesting a strangling. After searching the house thoroughly, the group went outside. They found the body of the old woman behind the building. Her neck had been cut so severely that when they tried to lift the body, the head fell off.
The next day, the newspaper offered to its readers these new facts.
Paris, July 8, 1840. The police have questioned many people about the vicious murders in the old house on the Rue Morgue, but none of the answers revealed the identity of the killers. Pauline Dubourg, a washwoman, said she has known both of the victims for more than 3 years and washed their clothes. She said, "The two seemed to love each other dearly. They always paid her well. She did not know where their money came from," she said. "She never met anyone in the house. Only the two women lived on the fourth floor." Pierre Moreau, a shopkeeper, said Mrs. L'Espanier had bought food at his shop for almost 4 years. She owned the house and had lived in it for more than 6 years. He never saw anyone enter the door except the old lady and her daughter, and a doctor 8 or 10 times, perhaps. Many other persons, neighbors, said the same thing. Almost no one ever went into the house. Mrs. L'Espanier and her daughter were not often seen. Banker Jules Mignot said that Mrs. L'Espanier had put money in his bank, beginning 8 years before. 3 days before the killings, she withdrew a large amount in gold. A man from the bank carried it to her house for her. Isidore Musée, a policeman, said that he was with the group that first entered the house. While he was going up the stairs, he heard two voices, one low and soft, and one hard, high, and very strange. The voice of someone who was surely not French, the voice of a foreigner, maybe Spanish. It was not a woman's voice, he said, although he could not understand what it said. But the other voice said softly, in French, "My God." Alfonso Garcia, who is Spanish and lives on the Rue Morgue, says he entered the house but did not go up the stairs. A nervous man, he was afraid he might be sick. He heard the voices. He believes the high voice was not that of a Frenchman. Perhaps it was English, but he said he doesn't understand English, so he is not sure. William Byrd, an Englishman who has lived in Paris for 2 years, also entered the house. He said the low voice was that of a Frenchman, he was sure, because he heard it say, in French, "My God." The high voice was very loud, he said. He is sure it was not the voice of an Englishman, nor the voice of a Frenchman. It seemed to be that of an Italian, a language he does not understand. He said it might have been a woman's voice. Mr. Alberto Montani, an Italian, was passing the house at the time of the cries. He said the screams lasted for about 2 minutes. Montani, who speaks Spanish but not French, says that he also heard two voices. He thought both voices were French, but he could not understand any of the words spoken. All who went in the house agreed that the door to the room on the fourth floor was locked from the inside. It was quiet. They saw no one. The windows were closed and locked from the inside. There is only one stairway to the fourth floor. They said that the chimney opening is too small for escape that way. It took 4 or 5 people to pull the daughter's body out of the chimney. It was 4 or 5 minutes from the time they heard the voices to the moment they entered the room. Paul Dumas, a doctor, says that he was called to inspect the bodies soon after they were found. They were in a horrible condition, badly marked and broken. He said only a man could have caused such injury. The daughter had been strangled, he said.
When we had finished reading the newspaper's report of the murders, we were quiet for a while. Dupin had that cold, empty look that I know means his mind is working busily. He asked me what I thought of the crime. I said I considered it a mystery with no answer. But Dupin responded,
"No, no. No, I think you are wrong. A mystery, yes, but there must be an answer. Let us go to the house and see what we can see. There must be an answer. There must."
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.